as we've talked about this game, the importance has certainly changed given the gravity of accusations Deshaun now faces again off the field, and given how poorly the Cowboys, the Browns offense and Deshaun specifically played against the Cowboys. You know, I stopped short yesterday, Chris, of calling this a must-win game.
Mm-hmm.
But I did add the caveat that I don't know there's a team in football that needs more of a win in week two than the Cleveland Browns for legitimate reasons, for logistic, like, you know, don't start 0-2.
Right.
And then for just, you need to get out of this rut as soon as you humanly possibly can.
Yeah, I think the other layer to this whole thing is this is supposed to be, the early portion of the schedule is supposed to be the more favorable one for the Browns. And we don't know what teams are going to look like as the season progresses. There could be injuries, there could be chaos going on, there could be a quarterback change, there could be a coaching change, whatever. But at least on paper, it seemed like the early portion of the schedule was a little bit more favorable for the Browns. And for them to start 0-2 when they come into the season with Super Bowl aspirations, that's a hit to the psyche. And you're absolutely right. I think in listening to the players throughout the course of this week, they feel like there are a lot of things that they can correct from week one, that they've identified some of the problems that they had in week one. It's one thing to say that. It's another thing to go out and actually address those things, fix those things. If they don't go out and address those things and fix those things, then I think it's going to be a hard thing for this group of players to process as it's happening.
Chris, Tony said the phrase, I don't think the Browns can score with Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's crazy
Jacksonville
to think about that, right?
Scored 17 points in week one against a defense in Miami that, let's just say, it ain't murderer's row.
No.
It might be better than last year.
Right.
I'm not sure it's going to be better, or it should be better, or anywhere near the Browns' defense. But I think, again, that is the recency of week one and the fact that the Browns do need to show you can put up at least 17 points of offense.
I'll also say this. For the Browns' defense, they should be sending a basket of muffins to Deshaun Watson in the Browns' offense because it's really taken some heat off a defense that woefully underperformed in week one against the Cowboys. And I totally understand they had a lot of things working against them. And when the offense cannot function at all and goes punt, 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 you know what I mean? Like, it obviously makes things very, very difficult on that defense. But the defense was supposed to be the backbone of this team.
Mm-hmm.
The offense was supposed to be better, but the whole conversation was, don't need the Browns offense to be the 49ers. Don't need the Browns offense to be the Detroit Lions, the Miami Dolphins, because the defense is going to be the anchor of this team. The defense is going to be the focal point of this team. The defense is going to make it so that this offense doesn't have to score, you know, 24 to 27 points per game. They were terrible against the Cowboys in week one.
I don't know, I'd say terrible, but I don't, you can't spin it that they were,
I mean, the defensive
great
breakdowns that they were having. I felt like the wide receivers for the Cowboys were getting more open than what you would think against a secondary that has that caliber player. Didn't feel like they put a ton of consistent pressure on Dak, despite the fact that there was a lot of youth along that offensive line and inexperienced along that offensive line. Like, there were advantages that you felt like the Browns had going into that game against Dallas and some circumstances working against the Cowboys. And given that, I felt like this Browns defense woefully underachieved in week one.
Well, that I will agree. That's, they didn't play up to their level, and especially they didn't play up to their level at home. So we do have some Guardians news to pass along. You heard it in Meredith's 2020. Alex Cobb is now going to the IL. We don't know for how long. We do know that we had to kind of skip a start over the LA series because of some issues, and now they've called prized prospect reliever Andrew Walters up, which, honestly, I think, like a lot of people, I'm excited to see another, you know, hurler in the bullpen.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you. I think the Cobb thing and the, you know, Boyd struggled last night. This conversation continues to evolve with this Guardians rotation of, when it comes to the playoffs, who gets the ball first?
Yeah. I mean, you could have made an argument for Alex Cobb just based on his experience. And based on the way that he has pitched at times, But if you're talking about somebody who's going to be coming off the IL, doesn't have a lot of starts with the Guardians, still working his way back, somebody who's dealt with so many injuries throughout the course of his career, it's hard to put that level of pressure on him, considering it's going to be so close to him coming off this IL stint. And who knows? This is the kind of injury that could linger. This is the kind of injury that could affect the way that he throws certain pitches. And I just, Nick, to your point, if you look around the American League, there are very few teams, maybe Houston is the only other one, where you say, like, I don't know who's getting the ball in game one of the playoffs. Baltimore's going to go to Corbin, right? The Yankees have Gerrit Cole. Seattle has any number of their young pitchers, or they could go to Luis Castillo if they want to. The Royals would go to Cole Reagans. Maybe they would go to Waka for experience, but like...
Maybe Lugo.
Maybe Lugo experience?
I would kind of be surprised if it wasn't Lugo, as a matter of fact, now that we said it.
I mean, for the Guardians, you're talking about Matthew Boyd? Maybe?
So I think Boyd's like the second least likely guy to get the ball. And I think it's just pure stuff-based.
So you're just going to go with the guy who has the best stuff, the most overpowering stuff?
I think that's... Well, okay... It's like tiers.
Yeah.
I think you have to say, like, you know, Boyd and Lively are in a similar tier of stuff.
Okay.
And then I think Bybee's kind of the next tier up. And then I think Williams and Cobb are the next tier up.
Yeah.
So I think the first two tiers is where you're going to have to decide who's the guy. Because I think the downside of putting Boyd out there, if he's not fooling him, you might as well surrender game one.
Right.
Whereas if Boyd comes in like the fourth inning or fifth inning or sixth inning and his stuff isn't fooling him, well, then you just go to another reliever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I now have to alter my starter plans. And that saying is somebody who's coined, yeah, Boyd, who has been on the Boyd is a better pickup than people thought train.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Boyd and Lively are the two least likely guys. And to what you just said, I actually want to get back to something real quick before we continue going through names. You made a very astute point, which the Yankees know they're going to throw Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
Burns for Baltimore. I think it's not an advantage. You'd rather have an ace to start game one and know he's going to get, you know, in a 7-game series, he's going to get one, he's going to get four, he's going to get seven. Mm-hmm. Same point. I do think that it offers you more flexibility where if you wanted to go to somebody with lesser stuff, or if you wanted to say, all right, well, our guy with the best stuff is the youngest guy in the staff, and I don't want to put him in that situation. I think it does offer you the flexibility to go to a Cobb if he's off the IL, to go to a Boyd, to go to somebody who has been in these situations before. You'd rather one thing, but the advantage you have is varying levels of stuff and experience, and you can kind of you manage the series, I think, a little bit differently, and that might actually help you in some series.
I just, from my standpoint, I wish. The guy who has, you know, the skins on the wall and the experience, I wish they're a little bit better than Matthew Boyd and Alex Cobb.
Can we not lump them into the same crowd here?
You know what I mean?
Alex Cobb is an all-star last year.
Yes.
Alex Cobb has started multiple playoff games.
Uh-huh.
Like, Alex Cobb stuff-wise is...
It's better than Boyd.
By a significant margin with love and respect to, yeah, Boyd.
When healthy and effective... But that's the variable that is very difficult to try and figure out right now.
We've got effective, though.
I mean,
he just
effective.
Hasn't been healthy.
He just hasn't been healthy.
So he just needs to be healthy for game one, and then we can go from there. I think it's Cobb. I don't know if it's a hot take because he's only had three starts in Cleveland.
Wow.
But we saw him start in 2013 against the Guardians in the wild card game. This is a guy who has multiple playoff runs and, you know, what is he, 33, 34?
I think he's 35, isn't
like,
he?
Like, did I... I made him younger?
Yeah, I think
but
he
no,
did.
But no, I mean, I think it's Cobb. If he's... with the caveat, I think he's got to have one start coming off the IL.
So that's the thing.
Yeah.
You got to see that he can be effective coming off the IL dealing with this blister finger thing.
Yeah. It can't be his first start. We agree on that.
Right, because then that if he goes out there... And that's still bothering him, and he feels it in the first inning, the second inning. that changes your whole plan for the remainder of the series, and you just don't want to get into a situation like that.
In that event, though, I'd probably go Cobb with Boyd, the next man up in the bullpen.
Why not Gavin?
I don't want to. I don't. He's not been where he needs to be this year, and I don't want to put that pressure on him.
Okay.
I'd rather. I'd really. Because here's the thing: from a pure stuff point standpoint, Gavin Williams is the closest thing you'll have on the staff to Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, he's got the best stuff.
And I think he's your ace long term. This is his first toe in the water in the postseason. I don't want it to trial by fire in game one.
It's hard for me to, and I love his stuff, and I don't think they need a whole bunch from him. That's the thing about this situation for the Guardians. If you can just get a starter to go one time through the lineup, one and a half times through the lineup, and turn it over to the bullpen, Gavin's capable of overpowering those guys the first time through or whatever. It's also hard for me to shake the fact that when they played against the Dodgers most recently, dude couldn't find the strike zone, and when he's just not in command of his overpowering pitches,
yep,
he can't go an inning.
And I think that begs the question, if you're Steven Vogt, who do you trust in that first game to give you five? And I don't know if there's an answer. I would lean Cobb, but if he leaned Tanner, because that's the thing. Like, Cobb's got the Cobb has the experience. Williams has the best stuff, and yeah. Bybee's been the most consistent. I do think I think the idea of if the playoffs were today, who gets that first start in the playoffs? I think it's a great question, and mostly Chris, because I think if we have this conversation 10 days from now or 14 days from now, the conversation might change.
14 days from now, indicating that Alex Cobb comes off the IL and he pitches well?
Not just that, but I mean, you know, Gavin has two or three starts in that time period to show that he's back on the right side of Gavin, you know?
Yeah.
A really bad start by Tanner, and he's been prone to them about once every four starts. That might be something that changes their mind. Like, honestly, even Matt Boyd getting back to being who he was for the first seven starts as opposed to last night where it was a little more rocky, I think that might even give you further pause to maybe suggest throwing him out there. That, again, I think he'd be choice number four, but like, I think that's what's so interesting about this question is it's going to change every time we see any one of these five guys start.
I'd go Bybee.
Why is that?
I think he's been the most consistent. I don't think they need him to go deep into the game based on this bullpen. And I just think, like, I don't know if he has the same ceiling as somebody like Alex Cobb, but I think he's got a higher floor than somebody like Gavin. And Matthew Boyd, I just don't know what you'd gain there. He's older, but he's pitched an inning in postseason baseball.
Yeah.
An inning.
And that's he's a soft tossing guy
that doesn't have overpowering stuff, and against the wrong matchup, I think he'd be out of there quickly. I think they'd take advantage of
it. It's wild about the Boyd thing is I've seen their time. The guy has thrown 94 before.
I know.
The idea that is now considered soft tossing is one of the most interesting statements on the situation in baseball. But I mean, I think Bybee is the in between of Gavin Williams and Cobb.
I also think Bybee's earned it. He leads him in wins. He leads him in ERA. He leads him in strikeouts. He's been the most consistently reliable arm that they've had this year.
I wonder how much that weighs into it for Steven Vogt. If it were, let's say it was Cobb versus Bybee. I'm not saying it is, because Cobb might not even be in the equation from his side of things. I'd be really interested to get his perspective on the importance of experience, which Cobb has, and perception, because it's not perception. I think it is reality. I agree with you that if we talk about who's been here all season that's earned it, it is absolutely Bybee. Lively's been too fluctuating between good and not less than good. Gavin has had too many clunkers, and you mentioned that first inning against the Dodgers. I'm trying to think. Yeah, none of the other guys that have been here that long matter that are going to be in the equation. So I think that's a philosophical question. And I will say, though, I think if you do send Tanner out there, you better be prepared to have a quick hook. I mean, and I hate to be that way, but that, especially in the ALDS, assuming you get a top two seed, I just think, and Vogt has shown a quick hook in the regular season. Hadn't really had a quick hook with Bibee, though. He's had one with Gavin. He's had one with a lot of guys, almost everybody on the staff, but not Bibee.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be something he has to adapt to.
Right.
Because it is, you have such little time and such little margin for error, especially if your offense isn't chugging along. And is at the same rate it is now, which I think is better than it has been, but still not where it was in, you know, May and early June.
I just think, Nick, there's so much uncertainty with Alex Cobb. He's made three starts in Major League Baseball all year. Not just with the Guardians, but all year. I mean, that's not a lot. It's not a lot to go off of.
I mean, if you trust him, though, to start in a late season game, meaning the final week of the season, if the number one seed is riding on it, what's the difference between that and game one of the ALDS?
Well, my problem is three starts all year, and he's going to be so closely removed from being pulled off the IL.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of the injury that he has is one that could pop up again. And it could pop up swiftly.
I mean, Cobb's stats in those three starts,
They're really good.
They're really, really good.
And his numbers last year, his numbers the year before that. And you're right, he does have postseason pitching experience. And we've seen him handle the magnitude of that moment and the pressure of that moment. And not everybody's built for it. But I think both in terms of earning it and what it could mean to the future of this organization, I think it's the time to give Bibee a shot.
I think what complicates this question, because Bibee is a swing and miss guy.
He is.
He's got 166 Ks this season and 150 innings. So is Cobb. So like there's, okay, so that's a push. 216-474-0092. How do you set up the postseason rotation? Who do you begin with? If the playoffs began tonight, who do you go with first? Let's go with Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
How you guys doing?
Good, man. Appreciate you.
So I have a question for you. So I heard you talking about Boyd and his start yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're being super fair with that either, considering 9 Ks and only one earned isn't necessarily a bad start. He labored through those two innings because of the stupid errors and stuff. So for me, he's been pretty consistent since he's come back. Yeah, it's the sample size of 7 starts or whatever it's been. We can't fault him for not having playoff experience because he was on a bad team either. So for me, in perspective wise, yeah, I think we need the lefty in that rotation in the playoffs. But my number one is Bibee, and I agree with you guys on all the points. He deserves it. He's leading in a lot of statistical categories. I like the passion and the fire he has on the mound. Yeah, he's another one, though, that you got to be kind of careful with and keep on a short leash if he's leaving the fastball up. My biggest concern with Gavin is him being able to spot his fastball and him having the movement on it. Throwing 97, and yeah, the stuff that you guys bring up, if you're leaving that up in the zone, he's going to get hammered in the playoffs. My biggest concern is that. I mean, our bullpen is going to be laboring through this postseason. I mean, God, 5 of them are already over, 60 innings? I mean, and we're going to keep riding that, obviously. But my concern is the 2 and the 3 starter and how we're going to go around that. I think the bullpen game is going to be a big part of this postseason, whether we like it or not. We've kind of pushed ourselves to that with the way this rotation is shaping up. So Bibee, number one, without a doubt, deserves it. Let's see what the kid's got. We've made him nation. We got to ride the wave. We've come this far. Why not keep it rolling? Have a good day, fellas.
You too, buddy. Appreciate you. Jeff, give us a call there, 216-474-0092 if you want to. The problem with Boyd is, and again, he's been really good. I will say, we seem to want to give him a pass. If you say one earned and you negate the 3 unearned runs, you're probably taking some of that off mat a little bit. And he did allow, I think it was 8 or 9 base runners to match the 9 Ks that he did have.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm not trying to run the man down, but we can put that start in proper against, by the way,
Oh,
a dog-ass White Sox team
that against lefties over the last 2 weeks is batting 100 or something like that.
Yeah, but it's the White Sox. It's the White Sox.
That's what I'm saying.
Just,
like, woof.
But I think, so I actually wonder if because the rotation is stabilized here, you know, even though it's not perfect right now, I do wonder whether you've had time to take some of the heat off that bullpen, because I really wonder where you would use the bullpen games, but I'm actually not that worried about the bullpen's health because you have been able to get some more innings out of your starters here recently. That plus, if you get a top two seed, you're going to have a little extra time to rest those guys up. And then once you get into the playoffs, you're not playing every single day back to back to back. So I think the bullpen being overworked thing, I think we're probably past that concern right now. I don't know where you are with that.
Well, the other thing that stands out to me about this bullpen, and look, they have relied heavily on Emmanuel Clase, and rightfully so. He's been dominant, and anybody that had him would do the same thing. And if you have a closer like him, you're going to work that guy as much as you feel fit. But it's not like they go... It's not like there's only one guy in the bullpen that they can go to, and they have to overuse that guy. You know, I think the talent and the effectiveness is spread out enough across, and the depth of the bullpen is something that could be beneficial for them. Look, Steven Vogt's going to have his guys that he trusts more than other guys, and especially when you get into a postseason series, but I think there's enough depth in that bullpen where you don't have to wear down just one arm or two arms or something like that.
Even after losing Henches, it looks like he's going to be out even next year.
Mm-hmm.
And Barlow just plain not working out in the second half of the season. You still have four high leverage guys. Two or three of them that can give you multiple innings at a time. I agree with you on that. 216-474-0092. Ryan and Akron, you stay there. If the playoffs were to start tomorrow, who gets the first game? Chris says Tanner Bibee. I say Alex Cobb. But I do think between the three guys, I don't know there's a definitive wrong answer.